Alice Hoffman is the best-selling author of 20 acclaimed novels, including The Third Angel, The Ice Queen, Practical Magic, Here on Earth, and The River King. She has also worked as a screenwriter, and several of her novels have been adapted for the screen, including her novel for teens, Aquamarine. Her new book is The Story Sisters, and she joins us in advance of her event at Vroman's on Friday, June 12th.
So first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview. And we're all really excited about your upcoming event at Vroman's. It should be a lot of fun, I think.
I think so, too.
So your new book is The Story Sisters.
Yes.
And I think I'd like to start with the idea of story, because it seems to me like obviously the book has a story, but storytelling is really a theme of the book. I think it's obviously no coincidence that it opens at the Plaza Hotel, which is a kind of iconic location for children's books from the Eloise books.
That's really true. And I was just actually, I just went there yesterday and had a drink there in the Oak Bar. And it's such an iconic place. It's kind of symbolic for all, you know, all that's beautiful and kind of timeless about New York City.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it's that aspect, and then the fact that there's, like, there seems to be in that scene quite a few elements of, like, fairy tale stories. Like, there's a horse-drawn carriage, there's a sort of ball of sorts. You know, in this case, it's an anniversary party. But people are dressed up, they're made up, it's a glamorous event, but it doesn't end the way that, you know, a fairy tale event would end. I mean, it ends in a sort of horrible event. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that theme and how that sort of came to you, and what you wanted to say about the sort of act of telling a story with this particular book.
Well, you know, the book really began for me when I started writing a series of little fairy tales, little dark little fairy tales, and then I started to realize that if you put them all together, they could really spell out a life. And the characters of the Story Sisters kind of came from the idea of, you know, three fairy tale sisters, all of whom have quests, and the quests are all different, but they're all about a way to find your truest self and a way to find redemption. And started to think about how every fairy tale is a quest, and how, you know, that whole idea of being lost in the briars and having to find your way through this dark wood to something light filled is really a theme, you know, of many, if not most, fairy tales. And it really, it kind of is the way to chart a life. I mean, I think that, I think that life is a series of tragic events strung together with beads of light. And that's what the book is really about. It's like, how do you find your way, your path, through whatever your life turns out to be?
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, the book does span a number of years.
Yeah.
I think what's really interesting to me about that aspect of it is sort of how each of the characters, for one thing, how each of the characters is, they're obviously all on a sort of quest, and some of them are more sort of like Elf's quest. Elf is the, for people who haven't read the book yet who are listening, is the oldest daughter, and I think really the most troubled. I mean, she has something pretty terrible happen to her at the beginning of the book, and the rest of the book really is about finding redemption from that moment for her, and she goes about it in a tortured way that I think a lot of people will be able to identify with, and it's not a terribly productive way to go about it. It's really a destructive way.
I know. It's really so interesting. I mean, for me, there were a lot of interesting things about the way families react to trauma and how, you know, siblings can have the same sorts of experiences and react so differently.
Yeah, and I was really interested in how throughout the book, one of the reactions to trauma of any kind really is storytelling in some sense. That the secret world that the three sisters inhabit, Arnell, and the language they speak, Arnish, really comes out of this this traumatic moment in their childhood. And it causes them to sort of create a sort of parallel narrative to their own lives. There are other moments, too. And you could go through the book and pick apart all the different places where people tell someone a story. And a lot of times it's to comfort them or to cheer them up. And I thought that it was interesting to sort of the redemptive power, but also the therapeutic power of telling a story and what that means when you're in a time of crisis.
Yeah, I think that's so true. You know, I think, you know, part of it is the whole idea of spinning straw into gold, you know, taking the kind of straw of your life or the tragic elements of your life and making something beautiful out of it. And I think, you know, for me, in a way, this book was also a discovery about what storytelling meant to me. You know, sometimes I feel like, you know, I don't understand why I'm doing this, you know, why it's a beautiful day outside and I'm sitting in a dark room, you know, writing. And, you know, it was a way for me to kind of understand the importance of storytelling. And I think you're completely right. I think, you know, if somebody were to track, you know, all the times that somebody's told a story in the book, it's to give comfort or to try to understand trauma or to try to find redemption.
Yeah, and if we could talk a little bit about the language that they invent, that they speak to each other. I thought, and reading it on the page, it's a really beautiful language. And I saw, you could occasionally see elements of other language, you know, real languages that exist.
Yeah.
Like I saw some French in there, and I know that the girls, you know, a good portion of the book takes place in Paris. So I'm wondering if there's a relation there, like if there's something about, you know, that they've cobbled together these pieces of their real life into this sort of parallel life.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And, you know, for me, it was, you know, the language that, you know, pre-teenage girls would invent. And so structurally, it's not too complicated. It's more emotional.
Yeah.
You know, it's like an emotional language, and it definitely takes from the real world. It takes from French. It takes from Russian. It takes from nicknames for each other. And then it kind of slushes over into the real world in terms of their nicknames for each other in the real world. And, you know, of course, you know, I thought about the Brontes and about siblings that are so kind of separated, that kind of create their own world, whether a language or whether stories, but they have their own world, and they're kind of a force against the outside world.
Yeah, and to me it seemed like the book was largely about that unit of the three sisters coming apart,
and
I think it's sort of most pointed in the way that Elve progresses, that she gets these tattoos on her back, which are meant to show these places where she hopes wings will grow out of her back because she doesn't really consider herself human.
Yeah.
But as she ages and as she becomes more of an adult, she leaves that behind, and it sort of explicitly at one point says, you know, she was too old for Arnell and to speak Arnish and these things. And
yeah.
I think it's, you know, she's being wrenched out of that, you know, sort of wrenched out of childhood effectively.
Well, you know, I really think that sometimes if you can just make it through your adolescence, you can make it.
Yeah.
You know, and so I always think about that in terms of, you know, people who are, you know, very destructive towards themselves, whether with drugs or with suicide or whatever. If they can just make it to a certain age of reason where they can forgive themselves, and you know, being an adult is so much easier, I think, and so much less intense, that if you can just make it there, you can make it.
Yeah, it's certainly more stable. You don't have those sort of radical emotional shifts
yeah.
that you see, and you see those throughout all the, you know, all of the teen characters really are so up and down in terms of how they're relating to, you know, their mother and to themselves and to their siblings.
Yeah.
I thought it was a very, it's an interesting book because it's a really accurate portrayal, I think, of what lots of adolescents go through and to varying degrees.
I think, you know, I always believed that people stayed the same, but what I realized I was telling myself with this book is that, you know, everybody changes constantly.
Yeah.
You know, the person that you knew who was 10 years old is a different person at the age of 30 and 40, and, you know, people change. And so much so sometimes that they don't even know who that other person was who they used to be.
Yeah, and I thought it's a book where the tone of the book is very much like a sort of I'm interested because you've written screenplays, and I think of screenplays as being very scene oriented.
Yeah.
But in this book, there are really relatively few scenes. It's very much a told story, I think, that it's told almost like you would, you know, someone could sit down and tell it to you. The narrator is floating above the characters and then swooping down when it wants to.
Yeah.
So I was interested in how the subject matter of the story or the plot of the story influenced the prose style, and how did you come upon, like, exactly what the narrative voice would be and exactly what the pacing and the structure would be? Because I think it's it seems like it's related to that idea of a fairy tale.
Yeah, I think it is. These are really good questions. You know, I think for
Thank you.
Didn't know at the time I was writing. I'm a very kind of subconscious writer, but I think it was part of the process. And in many ways, it does, I think, mirror the telling of a fairy tale, where you could say, and then 20 years later, you know, and then we opened the door. It was kind of it's kind of like this oral tradition of I'm going to tell you a story. But there, I wanted the freedom to kind of swoop in at pivotal moments of their lives and really be in a scene and really, be very detailed, and then to kind of move forward quickly to another time that I thought was very pivotal. So, I really took a lot of freedom with the way I told the story. And I knew also, I wanted to cover a long period of time, but I didn't want to get stuck and kind of bogged down in kind of the details of kind of the more mundane parts of their lives. I wanted it to really flow and feel like all of this time could have passed and we were with them all of this time.
Yeah. If we could shift gears just a bit, I was really interested in the way that gender was represented in the book. That it's a very, well, obviously, I mean, the main characters of the book are all female.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first half of the book, it seemed to me that all of the men were agents of evil in some way, or not necessarily intentionally evil, but they were sort of, let's start with the father. The father is, abandons the family essentially and is an absentee mm-hmm. father at best.
Yeah.
There's a teacher at the beginning of the book who,
We
can't give too much away, but
no.
There's a bad incident that occurs at the beginning
right.
that involves a man.
Right, there's a bad man.
And then as we move through elves' teenage years, male influences continue to be pretty much across the board bad influences, that they either introduce her to the world of drugs, or they hasten her descent into further into that world, and they're sort of removing her from the unit of the family. And it's really not until the second half of the book that we start to see some male characters who are more agents of redemption or, forces of good. And I was curious, I think it could be, I don't have kids yet, but I think, I could imagine as a parent of a teen girl, especially a teen girl who's so beautiful and so desirable, that it could come to seem like every teen boy is like a demon, essentially. I'm wondering how that worked out in the book.
You know, it's funny because a very good friend of mine just sent me a poem that she had written about the Persephone myth, and I thought, oh, that's what the book is about. The book's about, a mother's fear, of losing her daughter.
Yeah.
To these underground forces, those underground hellish forces. And in some ways that's true. I don't really see it so black and white, and there's certain character that I don't want to talk about too much, but
yeah.
Who I think seems like a very destructive character, but whether or not he really is, it's really kind of one of the questions of the book.
I agree with you actually about that.
Yeah.
And that character changes to me, it really depends on whose perspective you're looking at him
from,
because
it's very complicated. And I think, part of that is part of that particular, it's a love relationship, is, people from outside never know what's going on inside a relationship.
Right.
And that's, I think, part of what the book is about. It is a story of three sisters and their mother, so it does, focus on them. But I think, there are male characters that are very, they're kind of fairy tale characters in that they're, they're the teacher, they're the mentor, they're the, the person that you find on the path that you least expect to find. So I think, it is a story of, these women who are on this quest, individual quest, and then the men that they do meet, the women and the men that they meet. So it is more about them. And I think, it feels, there are some demonic characters, but in the end, I don't think it's so gender driven, but it is about three women.
Yeah, well, I think it seemed to me that it was, again, it's like a part of specifically elves, you know, growing up or maturation or whatever,
yeah,
that we start to see a sort of balance coming in on that. Because I think that,
yeah,
I, you know, that it would be easy as a child of divorce, especially when the father is essentially gone, to mm-hmm. sort of project that upon all of the male relationships that you have, that the men are wrong or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like as she sort of grows and meets more men who aren't, you know, aren't that way, that I think it, you know, the tone kind of shifts towards a lot of the men in the book. And like, I think in the first half, the men aren't necessarily, even the ones that aren't, they're not evil, they're just kind of bungling. They're not,
yeah,
they're not as capable as the women in the book, which I think,
yeah,
is kind of a common thing in adolescence, frankly.
I think that's true. And I do have to admit that kind of, you know, there are these kind of fairy tale like grandmother, godmother, you know, fairy godmother figures who are, you know, kind of the wise older women who are there, you know, as guides, really. So
yeah,
that's definitely true. But I think, you know, again, I think it is, you know, a traditional fairy tale element, and, you know, who tells fairy tales but, you know, your grandmother.
Right.
So so that's the way the story goes.
And you said initially that the idea began with telling a series of sort of fairy tale-like tales. And I'm,
yeah,
wondering, did those become the chapter headings? Because there's...
Yeah, you know, they did. They really existed. Some of them existed before the book, and some of them existed, you know, as I realized, oh, these are the stories that begin the chapters. I didn't realize that when I first was putting the book together. And then I realized I was writing kind of a parallel story.
Yeah.
Parallel, you know, a symbolic story of, you know, what happened to elves. Story. And you know, I think it just kind of speaks to my love of fairy tales and how they're able to get to a certain psychological truth that is so incredibly deep.
Yeah.
Without being realistic or giving the real details of somebody's life.
And it's amazing how a lot of those stories cut across all different cultures too, that,
yeah,
there's some version of the same myth or the same basic like archetype, you know, across,
yeah,
the board. It sort of speaks to something that's universal about, you know, human life or whatever.
I think that's very true.
I'm interested to, there's, you know, there's a lot of lush descriptions of nature and setting. And the book takes place in Long Island and in New Hampshire and in Manhattan and in Paris. And I'm wondering how did you choose where you set the book, and how big of a role does setting play in a book like this? Because there is like a parallel world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like the physical world that they live in seems to me to have to be sort of importance, that it
yeah,
grounds the rest of the story to some extent.
I totally agree. I think the physical world is hugely important. It influences everything. You know, where they grow up influences everything. Paris is a huge influence in their lives. New Hampshire is a place that is very influential. And Manhattan is kind of a home base and very important. But, you know, it's funny because I don't feel like I chose those places. I feel like that's where those girls were. And it was just kind of an organic process. I didn't think, oh, you know, they're going to go to Paris. Oh, they're going to be in New Hampshire. But, you know, I think, you know, my experience filters through in ways that, you know, I can't even begin to understand, and I'm not sure I want to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I didn't really plot out this is going to happen in the novel. It just really, this is where they went, and this is where they lived.
Because this is, you know, going up on a bookstore blog, I've got to ask, what are you reading lately, and what are the last, you know, what are the last really great books that you read?
Well, you know, I have to admit to you that when I'm writing, I'm not reading. And I'm really not reading fiction when I'm writing, because I feel, for a couple of reasons. One, for me, you know, writing serves the same purpose as reading. You know, I'm a reader, and I'm a reader who writes. So, and the other thing is, you know, I want to make sure that I don't have anybody else's, you know, voice or rhythm or anything like that in my head. So I'm mostly, you know, right now I'm doing research for a book that I've been working on, and I've been reading a lot of Emily Dickinson for a project that I'm working on. So I don't think I'm a good source person for this.
Fair enough.
You know, I've been reading some novels that take place in France, because that's what I was writing about. And now that the book, The Story Sisters, is done, I'm reading The Elegance of the Hedgehog, and I read a wonderful novel called Chez Moi, I think it was called. I can't remember the title exactly. It was about, I don't know if you know it, it's a first-person narration about a woman who runs a restaurant. in France.
No, I'm not familiar with that. I know The Elegance of the Hedgehog, but I haven't heard of Chez Moi. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
The area of Paris that you describe is an area that, I mean, as familiar as you can be with a place where you've only been there for 10 days or something, but I spend most of my time in either the Marais or the sort of left bank area that the kids, that they go to, and, you know, shopping at Shakespeare and Sons, and it's just an amazing, you know, that area of Paris is just so incredible. So I was really happy to read those descriptions.
Yeah, so. It kind of feels like a fairy tale when you walk into it.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
in real life,
yeah. Well, that's great. Thank you so much for doing the interview. And
thank you so much. You asked me really good questions. These are things that, you know, I don't think about when I'm writing the book. It's only after that I realize certain things. So it helps for me to kind of understand the book myself. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. And we're, you know, again, we're all really excited about your event on June 12th at Vroman's. So
I'm looking forward to it. I'll see you there.
Great. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Take care.